We have with us Doug Allen. Doug Allen is a senior researcher for the Canadian Union of Public Employees, QP, an expert in the healthcare system and also in the analysis of the provincial budget. Good afternoon, Doug.
Hi, Edgardo. Nice to be here.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Muchas gracias por darnos el tiempo de hablar con nosotros. Well, today we would like to chat with you about the provincial budget that was presented on the 8th of August. So yo le estoy diciendo que esta tarde vamos a hablar sobre el presupuesto de la provincia y sobre la crisis en el sector salud y la reunión de los premiers en la...
Unfortunately, it's almost identical to the spring budget, despite the fact that since the spring budget, there has been a significant deterioration in the staffing of in our healthcare facilities. There is now approximately 47,000 vacant positions in our healthcare system. People are burnt out. They don't want to work in the system anymore. They're frustrated with sub-inflation wage increases. They've had enough after COVID. Result is it's very difficult to attract and retain the staff within our hospitals, our long-term care facilities, our ambulatory care facilities. And the result is that we have a crisis within our hospitals and within our long-term care homes. There's simply not enough staff to do the work required.
Okay. Look, Doug está diciendo que el presupuesto que se dio a conocer en agosto es idéntico al que se dio a conocer antes de las elecciones en abril, en donde hay poquito o nada en incremento para el gasto público. También dice que la crisis que hay en el sector salud es una crisis sumamente complicada. Hay más de 70,000 posiciones que hacen falta en el sistema de salud. Hay trabajadores que se han ido porque están cansados, están estresados, están quemados, burnout, y es difícil atraer staff en este momento posterior a la pandemia al sistema de salud. So go ahead, Doug.
It's very unfortunate that they haven't changed the budget to any extent since the springtime. The tiny changes that they have made are all can be dealt with strictly within the contingencies that the government set in its previous budget. So essentially exactly the same for healthcare as and for every other part of our system as existed in the spring budget.
Go ahead.
Yes. And this coincides with the, in my view, preposterous claim from the new health minister, Sylvia Jones, that there is no crisis in healthcare. But in fact, it's plain for everyone to see that the healthcare crisis has taken off. We've never had a system where we've had to close emergency rooms consistently throughout the summer in many different hospitals. We're also closing down intensive care units because they just can't have the staffing that is required. Fundamentally, this is based upon an issue that was first identified by the Financial Accountability Office of Ontario, where they estimated that even with 5% funding increases through 2031, there would be this, that even that would have to be based upon a reduction in compensation for healthcare workers. This is exacerbating the crisis in the healthcare system as people are burnt out and fed up.
Yeah, lo que Doug dice que desafortunadamente que no cambiaron en nada el presupuesto, e incluso se podría resolver con los fondos de emergencia que tiene el premier, tiene la provincia, pero hay nada o muy poquito para todos los sectores en el área pública. La ministra de Salud dice que no hay crisis cuando se sabe que han cerrado unidades de emergencia, que han cerrado muchos hospitales están al tope y la la Oficina de Contabilidad y de la provincia dice que con un 5% que se hubiera puesto agregado al presupuesto, se pudiera por lo menos contener y mantener los servicios que se habían estado dando antes de la crisis. Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. In its spring budget, the government put funding, it claimed, just below cost pressures in the spring budget. However, that is not the full story of what they are doing to healthcare. They are actually removing funding because they are cutting special COVID healthcare funding from the budget. That's a separately budgeted line item. The result is that overall healthcare funding is down by $94 million, or is budgeted to go down by $94 million this year compared to last year. So far from being able to achieve the sort of 5% increase that the Financial Accountability Office projected would occur through 2031, we're actually getting a funding decrease this year for health, with one exception, long-term care, which I'll get to later.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Lo que Doug está diciendo es que en este año van a recortar 94 millones al presupuesto, y como sugería la Oficina de Contabilidad, que con un 5% que se diera de incremento al presupuesto, se podría por lo menos mantener los niveles de servicio que se han dado. Pero estos 94 millones son... Por ejemplo, son más allá de lo que se dio en el presupuesto el año pasado. Entonces, todo esto está contribuyendo a crear esta crisis. Go ahead, Doug.
Thank you. Keeping the same spending plan as in the spring means that the cuts in programs will be even worse now, because inflation projections are now much higher than when the April budget was released. This is a key factor that's going throughout our entire economy. Inflation has taken off. We're now running at close to 8% inflation on a 12-month basis. The Bank of Canada estimates that inflation for the entire year, comparing 2022 with 2021, will be 7.2%. That is significantly higher than at the time of the budget. The Ontario government estimated inflation of 2.5% less than that. The result is that the dollars that were budgeted in April are now worth much less, significantly less than they were in April. That means that they will not go as far as they did in April, and the cuts that we feared at that time will be significantly greater.
Yeah. So a la situación actual, dice Doug, que la está empeorando, es que los gastos del plan o el presupuesto, hay que agregarle una inflación que está alrededor de 8% en un periodo de 12 meses. Eso es significantemente más alto que lo que habían proyectado en abril, porque en abril se estaba hablando de un 2% de inflación. Ahora la situación del valor, digamos, adquisitivo y de compra de esos dólares del nuevo presupuesto es mucho más bajo, porque si se están estimando en un 2% la inflación ahora se ha disparado y está en el 8% y va a durar por lo menos por los próximos 12 meses. Go ahead, Doug.
Yes. Typically, the cuts that we see to our healthcare system are cuts in the quality of care. They're what you experience when you go to the hospital system and find out that you have to wait in the ER for a long time, that the staffing isn't as great as it was in the previous times, that there are more people readmitted for care because the quality is down. Governments hate to actually cut the quantity of healthcare services because it's so easy to identify those cuts in quantity. So we can expect further cuts in the quality of healthcare services. But right now, what we're seeing is actual cuts in a very obvious way to the quantity of services. That is reflected in the shutdown of emergency rooms around the province and the reduction of ICU beds that are available. So the crisis has moved to a higher level.
Thank you, Doc. Lo que está diciendo es que, en otras palabras, la reducción del presupuesto del sector salud significa recortes en la calidad de la salud que se provee. Hay que esperar, tener largas esperas en las emergencias, no hay staff. Los gobiernos odian hacer esos recortes porque son obvios, pero en práctica han habido muchos recortes, como el cierre de emergencias, el cierre de unidades de emergencia, la falta del staff. Esas son, entre otras cosas, cómo se está manifestando la crisis en este momento en el sector salud. Go ahead.
So, we had a budget that was inadequate in the first place. It is now worse because inflation is higher and the funding is not changed. The infuriating part of this is that the government is now in a much better position to actually finance the need of healthcare than it was just a few months earlier. And that is because inflation drives up government revenue. The result of inflation over the previous year meant that the government had an unprecedented increase in revenue. The government last year actually brought in $20 billion in extra revenue that all came off the deficit, and the government's in a much better fiscal situation as a result. But that is continuing today. Inflation is driving up government revenue, and government is in a much better position to do this.
Lo que dice que el presupuesto es simplemente inadecuado. El gobierno está en una mejor posición de superar la crisis en el sector salud porque el gobierno tuvo ingresos de alrededor de 20 billones de dólares en recortes que hizo en los últimos años, ¿no? Entonces, y con la situación también de la inflación, el gobierno, por otro lado, también ha estado generando otros ingresos a las arcas del gobierno. Entonces, están en una mejor posición de resolver la crisis. No se entiende por qué no lo hacen. Go ahead, Doug.
Yes. So, nominal growth in the economy, that is both real growth and inflation, drives revenue. And because inflation has risen so much, nominal growth of the economy is now much bigger than what was expected in April. Despite this, the government has not significantly increased their estimate of revenue growth increase. They have somehow concluded that 9% nominal growth will bring in only $3.4 billion in revenue. We are being set up, as was the case in last year, to reduce our expectations for decent healthcare by an unrealistic estimate of government revenue. If we'd had the $20 billion in extra revenue last year, we would have been able to deal with the staffing crisis that was emerging. The government chose not to do that. The result is that we will face more restrictions on our healthcare, more closures, more staffing problems, inability to take care of our elders in the time ahead. The government's playing with their figures. The money is coming in. We have a situation where revenue can be expected to grow significantly, but we do not have a government that is willing to use that revenue in order to benefit people of Ontario.
Ya, lo que Don está explicando es que ha habido un crecimiento económico nominal más grande que los años anteriores, pero no se usan esos ingresos para mejorar o aliviar la crisis en el sistema de salud. Pero no están tratando de creer que no hay solución. Entonces, esto significa que si no invierten esos dineros que generaron, esos billones de dólares que generaron, no los invierten en salud, lo que tenemos que esperar es más restricciones, más problemas de staff, más cierre de emergencias y de unidades de emergencia, sin tener el gobierno tampoco ha hecho nada por los seniors, es decir, aliviar su situación, mejorar los servicios en el sector de las personas de la tercera edad. Entonces, ese es el panorama que tenemos. Yes, go ahead.
So, with this budget redo, we can expect bigger cuts, bigger workloads for the healthcare staff, and once all is said and done, higher government revenue, an underspent budget, and a lower deficit. But that's if the government gets away with its plan. The trick will be for labor and the community to mobilize sufficiently to require the government to do what they don't wish to do, which is to fund healthcare adequately. We've seen this, that community mobilization can make a significant difference. The one exception to the cuts that we are facing right now is long-term care. During COVID, we saw the plight of our elders in long-term care, the death, the privatization, the destruction that was brought onto that system. And the community rose up and demanded better from this government. And we did win a significant gain. We did win increases to the staffing hours, promises to increase the staffing hours in long-term care so they could do a better job, and promises to increase the capacity of long-term care beds. And that has resulted in a very significant increase for long-term care. While all of healthcare is seeing a cut, their funding is up 13.6%. It's up $810 million. That shows what we can do if we stick together and fight to build a better healthcare system.
Yeah, let me translate. What we're saying is that hay que esperar que nos van a poner más impuestos. Los trabajadores van a esperar más tareas, más que hacer para los trabajadores, lo que entre otras cosas puede terminar en un burnout quemando a los trabajadores. El truco es financiar el sistema de salud adecuadamente, pero no lo están haciendo. Y este presupuesto, en efecto, tiene un 13% de cortes en el sector salud, lo que representa $880 millones al sistema. Pero, dice, tenemos el ejemplo de las luchas que se dieron durante el COVID, sobre todo con las personas de la tercera edad. Lo que él dice que lo que tiene y puede y ha hecho la diferencia es la movilización popular, que el pueblo se movilice, que la gente, los trabajadores, el pueblo en general salga a las calles. Eso hizo la diferencia. Cuando comenzamos a ver muertes en las residencias de las personas de tercera edad, se comenzó a hacer movilización, se comenzó a hacer demandas y vimos mejoramientos en el sistema para las personas de la tercera edad. Entonces, esa es, como quien dice, la clave de lo que nos toca que hacer, salir a la calle, pelear y luchar para que en efecto se resuelva el problema del presupuesto o falta de fondos para el sector salud. Good point. Yeah, the people struggle, mobilization, you were saying, is the trick.
Exactly. What we've achieved in long-term care, we have to apply right throughout the healthcare system. Hospitals, ambulatory care, home care, paramedic services. We have to fight to ensure that the services are there for us when we need them. While we have made significant improvements in the funding of long-term care, or promised improvements, we'll see if they actually are met. We don't yet see a plan from the government to bring a comprehensive plan to actually bring the staff in and retain the staff in the long-term care and hospital and ambulatory care sectors. That there is an absence of that. Since this government was elected in 2018, the number of healthcare vacancies has increased from 20,000 45,735 earlier this year. That is a 25,495 extra vacancies in healthcare than when they were elected. That's a 126% increase. To date, there is no plan by government to recruit the needed staff to fill the new beds in long-term care and to bring the 4 hours of care per resident per day. There is just no such plan. Their plans are tiny compared to the need. By my estimate, by 2024-2025, we will need an extra 100,000 healthcare workers in order to meet the demands of a growing population, meet the demands of an aging population. We're a rapidly aging society, to deal with to meet the promises to increase long-term care beds and staffing hours, and to deal with the backlog of services that was created when services were cut during COVID.
This is exclusively for long-term care or for the whole health?
That's for the whole system. But that would be both hospital care, long-term care, ambulatory care.
Okay, gracias.
About 100,000 extra.
Thank you. Tenemos que luchar, dice, esa es la clave para mejorar el sistema de salud. No se han visto la mejoría, las promesas que hizo el gobierno. Este gobierno desde que fue electo, hay un déficit, escuchen esto, un déficit de staff de 126% de falta de trabajadores. No han cumplido con las 4 horas de cuidado al día para los seniors. Y para el año 2024-2025 vamos a necesitar 100,000 trabajadores en el sector salud. Estos hospitales son residencias de las personas de la tercera edad en las salas de emergencia, pero estamos hablando de la necesidad de 100,000 trabajadores en el sector salud. Ese es un número bastante grande. That's a huge number, Doug.
It is indeed. It is a huge number. There's 652,000 healthcare workers in the province right now. But because of the demographic change, we need extra staff. Just to deal with the long-term care staff, between the long-term care promises for extra beds and extra staffing that the government has made, we will need between 2021 and 2025 an extra 59,000 workers in long-term care. A very significant increase. But there is no plan to recruit and retain the staff that's in there. In fact, the number of nurses working in long-term care is down. Healthcare and social assistance employment in Ontario is down 5,400 since last summer. The number of non-practicing RPNs, registered practical nurses, has more than doubled since 2015. People don't want to work in the system anymore. 14,900 registered nurses and registered practical nurses in Ontario are now non-practicing. And there is no plan to find ways to bring them back into our system and help our healthcare system. So we don't have these closures of our ER rooms, our ICUs, our hospital beds. We don't have inadequate staffing in our long-term care. In home care, where wages are at their very worst in the healthcare system, we now have a situation where only 50% of the required home care visits can actually be met because nobody will work in that system. The wages and working conditions are just so appalling.
Yeah, dice que solo en el sector de long-term care, que son las residencias para las personas de la tercera edad, en este momento hay 652,000 trabajadores, dice, pero hace falta camas, hay un déficit de 18,000 camas. En este momento hacen falta 59,000 trabajadores en el sector del long-term care, que es el cuidado de largo plazo para las personas de la tercera edad. Y el gobierno no tiene planes, no hay planes para reclutar. No hay planes para retener el staff. Muchas enfermeras no están trabajando, han renunciado por cansancio, porque fueron quemadas, fueron, más bien dicho, burn out. Y entonces hay alrededor de 15,000 enfermeras que no están ejerciendo su profesión, que en efecto han dejado el sistema de salud porque es imposible trabajar por las tareas que les toca hacer, los turnos que les tocan hacer y el hecho de que no se dan abasto para las grandes necesidades en el sector salud. Okay, go ahead.
A key problem here is that the government is committed to a policy of wage suppression of the healthcare workforce, the overwhelmingly female healthcare workforce. We have a policy right now of 1% wage increases, nominal wage increases in the broader public sector. That reality is about to be imposed on tens of thousands of healthcare workers. Right now, hospital workers are facing recruit and retain staff facing that sort of situation. Next year, the Bank of Canada estimates inflation will be in the 4% range. Another 1% increase will mean a further 3% cut in real wages. And it will go on from there. We can't really deal with this problem unless we have compensation that at the very least can keep up with.
Dice Doug, ese es un punto muy importante, además de los otros que la he hecho, pero dice que hay una propuesta de un incremento salarial del 1% cuando la inflación está en el 8%. Estos son salarios muy bajos y tomemos en cuenta que estos son salarios de mujeres en el sector salud, porque la gran mayoría son enfermeras, doctoras, más bien dicho, enfermeras y staff de apoyo. Se van a imponer eso, dice. Entonces, ¿qué significa esto? Esto significa con una inflación del 8%, significa un recorte del salario, de la caída del salario en un 7%. Entonces, ¿cómo puede el gobierno lidiar, retener al staff alrededor del 4%? Significa que de 7% de este año y 3% del próximo año, eso significa el recorte del salario en términos globales. Es una situación insostenible en donde no se puede atraer a los trabajadores y no se les puede retener desde ningún punto de vista. Go ahead.
It's not just about compensation. There's other aspects of the work in healthcare, which is unfavorable. Contrary to popular perception, there are more assaults in hospitals, more assaults on staff in hospitals than in any other industry, more than police, more than firefighters. Long-term care facilities are also major sites for assaults on staff, on women, and they are increasing. Healthcare support jobs have seen almost half of all of the assaults on healthcare staff. That healthcare support jobs are now the occupation with the most assaults, resulting in lost time injuries. Again, far more than assaults on police and firefighters combined.
Yeah. Sí, hay otro factor, dice, que es lo que no se trata solo de salarios. Como ya lo dijimos, los salarios, hay una pérdida global del salario, pero se trata también de condiciones de trabajo, por ejemplo, en los hospitales y en las residencias para personas de la tercera edad. Hay más asaltos que los que enfrenta la policía y que enfrenta los bomberos juntos. Entonces hay muchos casos de trabajadores que sufren lesiones con cuestiones de tomar tiempo para recuperarse de esas lesiones, de esos asaltos. Entonces hay una cuestión también de fondo aquí en lo que se trata de la salud y la seguridad de las trabajadoras, que fundamentalmente son mujeres. Go ahead.
The assaults that have resulted in lost time injury claims, approved lost time injury claims, have increased 82% in hospitals since 156% increase over the same period.
Which sector?
That is all of the sectors within healthcare, but for the occupations that are healthcare support occupations,
okay.
We've seen 156% increase, particularly okay. high increase in those okay. in that area
okay.
for some reason.
Okay. Dice que la pérdida de tiempo por lesiones y fuera del trabajo se han incrementado desde 2012-13 en el 82% y en general en todos los sectores de la salud en 161% en las lesiones y en la pérdida de horas de trabajo por asaltos en el trabajo, particularmente contra las mujeres. Go ahead.
Yes. There has been a significant increase over the last decade as working conditions have deteriorated, as the crisis in healthcare has gotten worse. But we have not seen that sort of increase in other occupations that unfortunately get a lot of assaults, such as police and firefighters. They have not seen that sort of increase. And so there's not some sort of social need for this increase to happen. They just are increasing in healthcare. And there's no attempt to address that crisis other than paying lip service to it. Overwhelmingly, these assaults are on women. 83.5% of healthcare assaults that result in people going off work.
Por ejemplo, combinados en los distintos sectores del salud, ha habido un incremento del 33.5% de asaltos, y esos son particularmente contra las mujeres. Entonces dice, ¿cómo es posible que podamos atraer a trabajadoras que saben y que tienen temor que al lugar de trabajo donde van a ir definitivamente van a ser asaltadas, van a sufrir lesiones, van a tener que tomar tiempo fuera del trabajo para mejorar esa situación? Lo más terrible de toda esta situación es que no vemos que haya un plan para lidiar con esta crisis en el sistema. Entonces, la situación sigue así, ¿no? En un deterioro total de las condiciones de trabajo. Adelante. Go ahead, Doug.
Yes. The assaults that go on within healthcare are not well known in our society. The assaults that happen to police officers, to other first line responders, are much more well known, and steps have been taken rightly to reduce them. But it's not known as much that these assaults are going on. Sexual assaults, physical assaults, all sorts of assaults are going on in healthcare. And it's hard not to conclude that this is because the overwhelming majority of people who provide healthcare are women workers. And that is something that we have to work on as a society as a whole, that we can't accept assaults in other areas, and just as much we cannot accept assaults within healthcare.
Yeah, lo que dice Doug es que los asaltos a las mujeres en el sector salud no son conocidos, no lo conocemos como sociedad, no sabemos que las mujeres son asaltadas físicamente, son asaltadas sexualmente. Dice, por ejemplo, cuando un asalto sucede contra un policía, inmediatamente se toman medidas para controlarlos o reducirlos, lo cual es correcto, pero no se hace con las trabajadoras de la salud. Al contrario, es un tema no conocido en la sociedad en general. No se conocen de estos abusos, no se conocen del deterioro de las condiciones de vida de las mujeres. Entonces, eso es sumamente preocupante. Go ahead.
Instead of addressing the root causes of some of these staffing issues that we see in society, the Ford government has instead focused on things that they shouldn't be focused on. They're focused on privatizing our surgeries. They're focused on with this new Bill 7, where they will require hospital patients to be admitted, to be authorized to be admitted to long-term care without their consent. That is very troubling. Going into a long-term care facility is traumatizing. For most hospital patients who are transferred to long-term care, it means that they have met their final destination. Long-term care is not a place of cure. It's not a place of treatment. People lose their autonomy step by step in those facilities as they progress through the stages. It's a major step, and yet the government's solution for this situation is to pile on the pressure and give government bureaucrats the right to admit hospital patients to long-term care, even when those patients do not agree to that step. This is not a solution that we should be supporting. Likewise, its plans to privatize surgeries and diagnostic services is not a plan that we should be supporting. What we have found out through privatization is that when these clinics are set up, is that they, in almost every case, take steps to extra bill the patients. And this has not been stopped by governments, either federal or provincial. Result is that you pay more out of hand to get the services that you are that should be paid for through our public healthcare system. But that's what these private for-profit clinics do. They find extra ways to bill. That's not something we want in our healthcare system. We want care that is free at the point of care so that all can benefit from that and our society can grow together.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Las cosas que estos problemas que hay en el sector salud, el más preocupante es lo más preocupante es que no hay plan para solucionar los problemas existentes, la falta de staff, cierre de hospitales, cierre de unidades de emergencia. Pero ellos están enfocando en la privatización del diagnóstico y las operaciones. Y otra ley muy preocupante, legislación, es para que los pacientes de los hospitales se les pueda transferir a residencias de personas de la tercera edad sin su consentimiento. Estos no son lugares para curar a las personas de tercera edad. Ahí no hay sistemas especializados de salud. Básicamente los están mandando a un lugar en donde se les abandona y lo más seguro es que mueran, ¿no? Entonces, este derecho que tienen los burócratas para enviar, transferir, y que los pacientes vayan a terminar en una residencia de las personas de tercera edad es inaceptable. Y luego está todo el surgimiento de clínicas privadas que cobran caro, que cobran más allá y que siempre están buscando la forma de cobrarle más a los pacientes, ¿no? Entonces, estas ya son formas del enfoque del gobierno actual de Ford, que es la privatización del sistema de salud.
Instead of trying to find ways to attract and retain staff to the hospitals, the government's solution is to force 1,300 hospital patients into long-term care without their consent. That's what it does. That's what this legislation will do. Will allow government bureaucrats to authorize your admission to a long-term care facility without your consent. Right now, there's 38,500 people who want to be in a long-term care facility but are on a wait list for that. So it's not like there's all sorts of spaces there that people can just transfer to a long-term care facility. There's already a very significant wait list. Adding 1,300 people who do not wish to be on that list will make the wait for long-term care for people who want to be in long-term care significantly longer.
Yeah. So, dice, en lugar de tener una estrategia para retener, reclutar y retener trabajadores en el sector salud, se está planeando transferir 13,000 pacientes que actualmente están en hospitales a las residencias para las personas de la tercera edad, en donde ya hay una larga lista de más de 28 mil, que esto complicaría el panorama y haría más larga la espera para que estas personas, porque los que están en lista de espera son personas que quieren y desean ir a la residencia de personas de tercera edad para el cuidado de largo plazo. Pero estos 13,000 actualmente son pacientes en hospitales que no han consentido a que se les lleve a ese lugar.
Another way that the staffing crisis is affecting us is that our ambulances are being tied up at the hospitals. They can't discharge their patients because there's no hospital staff to accept those patients. As a result, hundreds of thousands of hours of paramedic time is spent waiting in hospital, not rescuing people from traffic accidents or dealing with cardiac arrest, but waiting in a hospital with their patients because they can't, there is not the staff in the hospital to accept those patients. It's utterly, utterly inefficient and is resulting, unfortunately, in cases where there are, in some cases, no ambulances available in local areas to respond to 911 calls. This is totally unacceptable. It's also driving up costs for the municipalities that have to pay for the paramedic services. This is not a way to run a healthcare system. We need to find ways to build our hospital capacity, to build the staffing in our hospital system, and not just to say that a bed is there. It's not about the beds. It's, you've also got to find the staff in the hospitals to take care of those patients and to operate those beds and the patients that are and take care of the patients that are in those beds. That is not happening. There is no plan from this government to develop the healthcare staff capacity that we need in order to not have this sort of crisis that we're seeing right now.
La otra crisis que estamos viendo es que las ambulancias están en los hospitales esperando ahí en los hospitales con los pacientes. Entonces se pierden cientos de miles de horas con las ambulancias ahí. Entonces, como resultado de eso, no hay ambulancias en las calles respondiendo a las llamadas del 911. Y entonces, en lugar de construir y la capacidad de los servicios, mejorarla, superarla, al igual que tener una estrategia de retención, de reclutamiento y retención de staff y los servicios en los hospitales. Entonces, esta es otra crisis más que se ha agregado a la ya existente. Doug, we have just a few minutes. I don't know if you will have time to do your find.
Yes. Thank you, Edgar. And I just wish I could have spoken in Spanish. I'm incredibly impressed by your ability to translate what I was saying.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We're looking forward to continue working with you and the Health Coalition in the future.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me on, yeah. Edgar, and thank you.